We're taking your tax filing questions all hour here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. Millions of taxpayers are taking advantage of the IRS decision to push back the tax filing deadline due to the coronavirus pandemic. But with the new tax filing deadline of July 15th, just weeks away, it's time to find those W-2s. What questions do you have about filing your taxes? What do you want to know about the standard deduction and charitable deduction nuances? Bring on your questions. We're at 800-642-1234. Mary Mellum is a tax professional from Green Bay who has been in the tax business for more than 30 years. Mary, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate. It's nice to be here.
Oh, it just seems like light years ago that we received those W-2s in January. What do we need to do to get organized for July 15th?
I would say hurry. A lot of people have filed their tax returns, but there are people who are procrastinators, and what I would say is the people that are filing their taxes right now are typically your April filers, and I think maybe some people should look back and say, you know, did I really file? Because I think that there are some people out there who may have forgotten that they didn't file. So I guess I would say to everyone, ask yourself the question, did I file my tax return? Did I get my refund? Did I pay my balance due? That's where I would start. And obviously, if you are the person who hasn't filed yet, getting those records together and getting it done by July 15th is important. One of the things, if you had forgotten and don't file by July 15th and owe money, you're going to have interest and penalty on top of that. So that's an important thing to remember. And it isn't any different than you would have had with the April 15th deadline, but with everything that's gone on lately, I think it would be an easy thing to have forgotten I didn't do it.
If you need to file an extension, what is the timeline for that?
The extension form, the filing of the extension is the same process that it was before, except at April 15th when you filed it, for an individual, you got until October 15th. The same deadline applies now. It's July 15th that you have the opportunity to file the extension, and in doing so, you get until October 15th.
Okay, so a shorter window for that extension.
That's exactly correct, and the extension form is a 4868 form for the individual, and it is good until October 15th, so it's important to do that. Again, remember for people filing an extension, it's an extension to file your tax return. It is not an extension to pay. And if you owe money, you will still have interest and penalty from July 15th till you pay that.
Mary Mellum is with us. She's a tax professional and an enrolled agent based in Green Bay. We're talking taxes this hour, taking your questions about filing front and center. What questions do you have about tax preparation? Have you filed your taxes yet? Do you remember if you did file? And have you received a tax refund? What software programs do you use to file, or do you go to an accountant? Let's join in with your questions. You can call 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Mary, let's look at some of those big life changes, like having a baby, or you retired during 2019, or you got divorced. What are those life changes that could perhaps really trip up your tax season?
Well, certainly the first one you mentioned, having a child. Having a child makes a huge difference in your tax return. You have a dependent that you'd be listing. You need a Social Security number to file the tax return with that dependent, but it opens the door to a dependent credit, and for a child under the age of 17, that dependent credit is a $2,000 credit. Also, with children in this time of parents working, and I know that the COVID has changed the way we're working right now, but for 2019, there could be daycare. Depending on your income, there could be earned income credit.
And that daycare would be the child and dependent care credit?
That is the daycare credit.
The daycare, yes. Okay, yeah.
And all of those things lead themselves to tax benefits that having a child, you know, certainly change the way a tax return would be for a person who did not have children.
What if you retired in 2019? You know, what is taxable on your Social Security payments that you received? And, you know, what benefits are taxable?
In terms of retirement, it depends on when you retire. And Social Security is one of those things that can be received by people who retire. Or Social Security, the age of Social Security is kind of a strange number. Typically, we used to think of 65 as Social Security age. But in truth, people can start their Social Security as early as 62 for early retirement. But there is a graduated age. Some people, 65 was full retirement, 66, and then there are even graduated numbers after that. But when someone receives Social Security, it is not necessarily non-taxable. If, depending on your income level, it may be up to 50% taxable, but if you have a higher income level, it could be as much as 85% taxable. And so people have to remember that Social Security comes into the mix of deciding whether it's a taxable issue or not.
Let's look at the situation of a divorce. How might that affect how you go about doing your taxes and what head of household means?
Interesting. Let's start with the head of household to start with. When you do start your tax return, one of the first questions at the top of the tax form is, what is your filing status? And we have single, married, and head of household. And under the married category, we have married filing joint or married filing separate. Head of household is kind of an offset of a single. Generally, a person is not married. A married person does not use head of household. Now, there are a couple of exceptions, but generally, head of household is for the individual who is single but has a child that lives with them, a qualifying child. And that's generally someone under the age of 24, under the age of 19, no questions asked, under the age of 24 and a full-time student. So that 19 to 24 category comes with some special contingencies. But a head of household, a person who is head of household, has a little bit higher filing status, or, you know, filing rate. They get a little bit better tax rates or tax brackets than the single person.
Well, let's pause right there as we talk about tax filing questions with tax professional Mary Mellum as our guide. What do you want to know about the earned income tax credit or the additional child tax credit? Have you called the IRS with a question? How did it go? Join in with your tax questions, your tips, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Mary Mellum here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show as we talk about tax preparation all hour. I'm Kate Archer. Ken, tax season can be stressful in the best of times, but 2020 has really heightened these anxieties. The IRS extended the deadline to July 15th months ago due to COVID, and now that deadline is near. Do you expect to get a refund this year? What do you want to know about the head of household filing that we've been talking about, or when you can claim a child as a dependent. Did your tax bracket change in 2019 and wonder what that means for you? Be part of this 800-642-1234. Mary Mellum is a tax expert based in Green Bay, and she stays with us. So, Mary, as we were talking about head of household, let's look further now into a situation where there is a divorce. There are dependent children. How does that work with taxes?
Well, first of all, we live in a unique state, one of about 9 states in the United States that deals with community property. And that, first of all, comes into play in a divorce situation. So two people get a divorce. Generally, it's not on January 1st. And so in the year of divorce, because we have a community property state, during the marriage, the community income is considered equal to both persons. So if you get a divorce in the middle of the year, somewhere other than January 1st or December 31st, you have to think about splitting that income. And again, there's always exceptions. Tax filing comes with all kinds of exceptions. But in general cases, if someone gets a divorce, and make it easy, on June 30th, they have half of the year as a married person and the other half as a single person. So that married income of both parties gets split between the two people. Doesn't matter if one person has all the income and the other person has none. In a community property, or more specifically a marital property state as we have, you split that income during that part of the year, and your half of that income plus your income for the rest of the year makes up your tax return.
I see.
Your filing status is determined on the last day of the year. So if you're single on the last day of the year, your tax return is either single or head of household if you happen to have the children that I mentioned earlier. If you're married on the last day of the year, then you're not, even if you're in the process of divorce, if the divorce is not final, you can't file single and generally not head of household.
Well, Mary, let's take a call now. Charlie is with us in Milwaukee. Hi, Charlie. What's your question about taxes?
Hi. I'm a 68-year-old. I'll be 69 in November. I'm retiring as a Roman Catholic priest on the end of July. And I file quarterly taxes as self-employed. But I was wondering, in retirement, can I just file annually instead of filing quarterly taxes with the estimate?
That's a very good question. The quarterly payments depend on what happens with your income. Many times people file quarterly payments if they are sole proprietors, independent contractors, and there's no withholding taxes taken out like someone who has a normal wage. When you go into retirement, your income may be coming from a different source. And if that income is coming from investments or coming from retirement, you have to look to see if there is any withholding to pay the taxes. If you do not have withholding, for instance, from a retirement distribution, and you have investments that you're living on, then you still need quarterly payments. So you need to look at some source of withholding. If you have it from someplace else, like retirement distributions, which if you're taking an IRA and taking money out of an IRA, there is an opportunity generally to have withholding taken out of it. So the answer to your question is, it depends.
It depends. So I should talk to either my broker or a tax professional.
Yes, because that person will know where your income is coming from and if you have the opportunity to do withholding.
Yes, I will have my Social Security, I will have pension, and I will do some weekend supply as a pastor on weekends, but it won't be that significant. I probably will not be drawing from my investments for a couple of years yet.
Well, if you have a retirement check that is coming from, you know, some retirement source or Social Security, you have the opportunity to have withholding. And as long as you have enough withholding, there may not be a need for the quarterly payments in for the same reason that you had to make the quarterly payments in your working life.
Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Well, Charlie, thank you for calling. We're talking with Mary Mellum. She's a tax professional and an enrolled agent, taking your tax particular questions all hour. Do you think our current tax filing system works, or do you think it needs to change? What would you change about it? What would make it easier for you to file your taxes? Have you filed them yet? Join in 800-642-1234. Let's go to Sue now in Milwaukee. Hi, Sue.
Hi.
Hi. What's your question about taxes?
My question is, I filed electronically on March 11th. And I was due to receive a $4,000 refund, and I haven't received it yet.
So you filed, you broke up there. You filed in March, is that right?
That's correct, March 11th, electronically. And I'm due to get a $4,000 refund, but I haven't received it yet.
Have you received any communication from the IRS?
No. When I go online, it just says that it's still being processed. They have received it.
Sue, and you did say you electronically filed.
That's correct.
Okay. What I would recommend, and this is going to take a little bit of patience, that you give the IRS a call. It could be that at that point in the year, you were at the COVID, you know, the start of the COVID-related things, and maybe your processing got tied up in the time when people were going out of the offices. Or there could be something else. Sometimes in our age of identity theft and things like that, sometimes there is a letter that comes out to taxpayers that the IRS is asking for you to prove your identity. And it may be, you know, for some reason other than someone stole your identity. But I would recommend that you give the IRS a call. And like I say, it takes patience because it takes a little while to get in to talk to them and ask them about the refund, just to make sure that there isn't some holdup that you could help by giving them answers.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Sue. Mary, what is that process like when you need to reach out to the IRS? Is it a phone number, or is it much more electronic now with website interaction? What is that like?
I would say at this point, reaching out to the IRS by phone, and this has been a difficult process through the COVID issue because their part of it was not staffed like it normally would be. As a tax professional, we have the opportunity to have a special number that tax professionals can use to call the IRS, and for us, it's a little bit quicker to get in to talk to them than the general 829-1040 number that most people would call. Mm. If this had been a paper return that was filed, I would have said, just be patient, because as we've heard the stories, that paper returns that have been filed by mail, when the IRS shut down, those paper returns were stockpiled in trailers. And now that the IRS is back to work on some level, they're starting to unpack those. So certainly anybody who paper filed a return is going to wait just because of the, you know, the massive numbers that they have to get through. Electronic filing, IRS has kept electronic filing open all through this process. And generally, the refunds, especially direct deposit refunds, have come through reasonably well. But anytime there's a time frame like that date, it's worth contacting the IRS just in case there's some kind of a glitch with the return that they're waiting for an answer from you, but you don't know they're waiting for an answer from you.
Yeah, certainly that March time, there was so much flux, so it's certainly good to follow up if you haven't heard back. It is tax preparation questions. They're front and center with July 15th filing deadline around the corner. Mary Mellum is a tax professional taking your questions about your return through the hour. Have you ever made a mistake on your return? How did it go about changing it? Do you do your taxes on your own, or do you send them to an accountant or tax preparer? What is your filing process, and are you sticking with it this year? There's time to talk. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We'll get back to your questions with Mary Mellum after this news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. It's an hour on filing taxes here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. According to IRS statistics, about 7.6 million fewer returns have been filed with the IRS as of mid-June compared with a year earlier. But that July 15th deadline now means taxes are due. It's time to work through your questions. Did you retire last year and start receiving Social Security payments? What questions do you have about taxes on your Social Security benefits? What do you want to know about tax changes for this year or how they affect you? We're at 800-642-1234. Mary Mellum has been in the business for decades, and she operates Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals with her spouse in Green Bay. Let's take another call now. Let's go to Joe in Neenah. Hi, Joe.
Hi. Mary, I retired at the normal retirement age to get full benefits at age 67. And I thought, gee, that's great. Now I can work and earn an income and all that. And then, surprise, IRMA tax. Most retirees are never told about IRMA. They don't know that that limits their income. And I was wondering if you could explain that and if there's any chance of getting out of that, because someone passed that a couple of years ago and we didn't even know it. But surprise, now our income is limited because of IRMA and what you have to pay for IRMA.
Joe, thank you. And IRMA stands for the Medicare Income Related Monthly Adjustment Amount. Mary?
Okay, I have to plead ignorance on that. I'm not exactly sure what he's talking about as far as the Medicare adjustment. Let me just go back to the rules. Joe mentioned that at age 67 he retired, so he gets full Social Security. And at full retirement age, you're allowed to earn as much as you like without jeopardizing your Social Security benefits. For people who are under full retirement age that retire on Social Security, there is a maximum limit that they can earn before having to give back some of the Social Security benefits. But I don't think that that's what he's talking about. And I know that there are some dealings with public safety officers or some people that are under the Wisconsin retirement systems that coexist with Social Security as far as how much Social Security you can receive. So yeah. I'm not exactly sure what the IRMA he's referring to.
I have some information on it. Okay,
sure.
The way I was told and the way I'm doing it, if you make over $85,000 a year, you pay a supplement Medicare payment. So your Medicare payments double every month until you reach the next tier, which is $110,000, you pay another Medicare supplement.
Okay.
The problem is that if you make...
You're talking about something different than income tax.
Yes.
What you're talking about, I wasn't familiar with the acronym, but what you're talking about is the Medicare premiums. And Medicare premiums used to be set at one premium amount per individual who was qualified for Medicare at that point. Some years ago, and I can't tell you the exact date of when it happened, it was more than 4 years ago, but at one point they, for lack of a better term, indexed the Medicare premiums based on your income. So people who make more money, and you mentioned the $85,000 level, but as your income is in different levels, your premiums for Medicare can be more than someone else's premiums. It's just a way of, I guess, funding the Medicare system. But that has really nothing to do with taxability.
Yeah.
It does determine how much you're paying for health insurance, which Medicare is considered a health insurance, which the health insurance deduction affects the tax return.
Well, Joe, thank you for bringing that to the table. Let's bring in Lynn now in Superior. Hi, Lynn.
Hi.
What's your question?
Hello.
Yeah, hi.
Yeah, so I've got I get a qualified dividend from a company that my grandfather set up many, many years ago, and I've always paid taxes on it. Now, this year I went through it, and they, you know, in the tax book, I always do my tax by paper. In the tax book, it said qualified dividends were taxed different than ordinary dividends, and qualified dividends would also be listed as ordinary dividends. Like I said, I've always paid tax on this before. This year, I read through that, and the way I worked it out, I did not have to pay taxes on it. So it made a difference on my tax return of, I would have to pay in, if I paid tax on it, I would have to pay in $200 about. I don't have my tax return with my tax with me. But.
So what is
it made a difference in that I would have to pay in $200 as opposed to getting $46 back. I sent it back and sent it in mid-March, and I haven't heard anything. The reason I sent in so early because I wanted to make sure. You know, I figured that I would hear and then I'd have time to correct it before the deadline.
Okay. Is your question, is this correct? I'm not sure what you're asking me.
Well, I would like to know who I would call to see what happened to that.
Okay. Well, the process with the IRS says that we accept your tax return on the surface of how you filed it. If it is something that is an error in computation, you might hear back from them. But if it's an error in theory, they have 3-year statute of limitations to contact you and say, oh, we don't think you did it correctly. So expecting to hear before the end of the filing season is an unreal expectation. But let me tell you about qualified dividends and maybe why you're seeing a difference. Dividends are a payout that shareholders of a corporation get. The qualified dividend is a special type of that dividend that meets certain rules. The qualified dividend is a long-term dividend or treated as long-term, and if it is qualified, it's taxed at the capital gain rates rather than the ordinary income rates. So if it meets the qualified dividend status, it will be taxed at generally the capital gain rates for most people are at a 15% rate, even if your tax rate is higher. But here's the catch which you might have fallen into. If you are an individual who is in the 12% tax bracket, your capital gain rate is generally zero on long-term capital gains, which qualified dividends would be. And so if that's where you fell in, your capital gain rate on the qualified dividend would be zero, and you wouldn't even be paying taxes on it. If you fall into the 22% tax bracket, which is the next one after the 12%, your qualified dividends would be taxed at 15%, And so you could see a difference there as well.
Mm. Mary, thank you for walking us through that. Lynn, thanks for the call. Mary Mellum is a tax professional and an enrolled agent, taking your tax preparation questions all hour long at 800-642-1234. Let's go to Jane now in Oconomowoc. Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Hi. What's your tax question?
I haven't gotten my tax stimulus, and the problem is that I'm estranged from my husband for over a year. I don't have an income, and he's self-employed, and he always had an accountant do, you know, where they file the taxes, where he files married but filing separately, and I don't file because I don't have income, and we don't live together, and I have not received my stimulus, and I'm wondering if he's got it because he files those taxes, or what do I do to find out?
Okay. First of all, the stimulus payment that you're talking about is roughly the $1,200 payment that taxpayers were given an advance of, so to speak, by the CARES Act that came out after the COVID started. Now, if the IRS, in issuing those payments, took a look at taxpayers, and if you had filed your 2019 return, they based your ability to get that payment off your 2019 return. If you hadn't filed the 19 return at that point, they looked at the 18 return. If you did not file an 18 or a 19 return, they looked at Social Security benefits and made the payments based on that. If you have filed nothing and are not involved in a married joint return, then IRS didn't know about you. IRS did have an ability for you to go in and file a tax return when you didn't have to, and it was a special stimulus tax return that you could file to tell them, I deserve this payment, get me in your records. So I would suggest that you talk to someone. If you don't file a tax return, that you talk to a professional, and or maybe VITA, if you know you can find anyone that's been involved with VITA, the free voluntary filing, that possibly you can get that return filed so that you can get on the stimulus records.
Mary Mellum is fielding all tax preparation questions this hour, and still time for yours. Do you work as an independent contractor, like for a ride-hailing service like Uber? What do you want to know about business expenses that can be deducted, and what about tips? Do you have questions about how your IRA withdrawal is taxed? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. In response to the COVID outbreak, the Treasury Department and the IRS are providing special tax filing and payment relief, but taxpayers need to take action before July 15th to avoid penalties from the IRS. So that's what we're spending the hour on, your tax questions with tax professional Mary Mellum, who stays with us. Well, Mary, time for another call now. Irvin is with us from Burnett. Hi, Irvin.
Hello.
Hi.
My question would be, I have some agricultural farmland that I rent, and my tax preparer took, I believe, a 20% credit on line 10 on the federal form. Is this a new one, or two new tax deduction this year?
I'm the agricultural land that you rent, do you have something to do with what's placed, you know, what's put on that land, that kind of thing?
No, the renter plants either corn or soybeans or whatever he wants.
Okay. What I think you're probably talking about is the qualified business income deduction, QBI.
Yeah.
Does that ring a bell?
That rings a bell.
Okay. Yes, that is a new benefit, it is up to 20%. There are some calculations that go into it, but it is a new deduction that came about 3 years ago, I believe. The 2017 Tax Act, it was part of that. And so, yes, it is new, and it applies generally to businesses, some rentals, which your professional must have determined that you qualify for that.
Irvin, thank you for the call. You know, Mary, we have gone through the hour, but haven't touched on the standard deduction. Is there anything we should be aware of or anything new about the standard deduction?
No, there's nothing new about it since it changed. And again, that was in 2017 that it changed. The single standard deduction, I'm going to use the old numbers because they're indexed for inflation each year. But when they passed the act, there was a $12,000 deduction for a single person, $18,000 for head of household, and $24,000 for a married couple. Each year, inflation increases those numbers slightly. But, you know, if you kind of remember that range, it makes it easier. Obviously, people who are retired get an additional standard deduction after age 65, so their number might be a little bit higher. But remember that that standard deduction replaced the standard deduction and personal exemption of old. So there is one number, if you do not itemize, that you subtract from your income, not standard deduction plus personal exemptions.
What about charitable deductions? Is it worth keeping track of those with a higher standard deduction?
It depends on how charitable you are and how many other things that you go through. Itemizing your deductions is of benefit if you can get above the standard deduction. But I'm glad you mentioned that because it's good to think of 2020. In 2020, there is a special rule, again, because of the COVID issue, that there is a $300 deduction for charity that does not require you to itemize your deductions. So everyone should be keeping track of their charitable deductions for the year 2020, not 2019, but for 2020, because your charitable deductions up to $300 will create another deduction in the 2020 year.
And very quickly, those stimulus payments that went out through the CARES Act, will we have to keep track of those in terms of taxes? Will they be taxed?
Okay. You've got a couple questions that you're asking in here. Number one, the stimulus payments that you received this year, it is important that people remember and keep track of how much they received. But the reason is not because it's taxable. The stimulus payment is not a taxable event. However, the stimulus payment will show up, or the stimulus issue will show up on the 2020 return. It is a credit, and on the 2020 return, it's going to say your stimulus credit comes to, if you're married, no children, $2,400. And the next question will say, how much did you receive? And if you receive the $2,400, there is no additional credit that will come through on your tax return. If you say, I didn't receive it, then your tax return will look $2,400 higher in refund. But keep in mind, the IRS computer knows all. And so
well,
your return will get bounced out or get reduced if you say I didn't get it and they say you did.
Well, Mary, thank you for joining us.
You're very welcome.
Mary Mellum runs Eshwabanon Tax Professionals in Green Bay. If you missed any part of the Tax Hour, stream it in its entirety later this morning at WPR.org/mornings. On Tuesday, we heard about the 150,000 Wisconsinites who are waiting for their unemployment claims to process, but historically, jobless benefits are not received equally by workers of color. Bram Sable-Smith reports on one African-American mother in Milwaukee navigating the system.
Alfreda Casterlo could hardly bear the first few weeks of work from home. The disrupted routines upset her 20-year-old daughter, who has autism.
I didn't know what to do. I was praying. I had to lay with her and rub her forehead and keep her engaged.
All of that while continuing to operate switchboards for Northwestern Mutual in Milwaukee. Then she lost that job. She immediately filed for unemployment help, not realizing how many other laid-off Wisconsinites had done the same.
Maybe I just didn't pay attention because I was working, but I had no idea that 200,000 people at that time were waiting on unemployment.
That was April 24th, and Casserlow is still waiting for her claim to be adjudicated, meaning she's gone 2 months without income while also supporting her daughter and granddaughter. She's about $2,000 behind in rent and started getting food stamps in May. And she says she's lucky because she can borrow $20 here and there as she waits for her jobless benefits to clear.
So that's where I'm at, and just trying to get my unemployment seems impossible.
Historically, laid-off Black and Latino workers receive unemployment aid at lower rates. An Urban Institute analysis about the Great Recession found that just 24% of laid-off Black workers received unemployment benefits in 2010, compared to 33% of white workers and 29% of Latino workers. Margaret Sims co-authored the paper. She says there are a number of possible reasons for the disparity for African Americans.
But perhaps one of the more important ones is that they lived in less generous states.
Meaning states with stricter eligibility requirements. In Wisconsin, lawmakers passed a dozen laws since 2011, restricting access to unemployment assistance. It's hard to say if those laws affected laid-off Black workers differently. The Department of Workforce Development did not have reports available on race, gender, age, or income. And Rebecca Dixon of the National Employment Law Project says that's part of the problem.
You manage what you measure, and if you're not even measuring it.
Dixon says in past recessions, Black unemployment peaked well after white unemployment. So while measures like the expanded jobless benefits passed by Congress this March have been helpful to many, letting them expire in July, as they're set to do now, would be inadequate.
And the other thing is, we don't know what the impact of state and local government layoffs is going to have on this, because that's also a place where lots of Black workers have middle-class employment.
Nationally, Black workers typically face double the rates of unemployment compared to white workers. That gap has temporarily narrowed during the pandemic, although the difference is still significant. Valerie Wilson of the Economic Policy Institute says a big reason why
is the disproportionate representation of Black workers in essential occupations.
Of course, that comes with increased risk of exposure to COVID. And Wilson says she'll be watching to see if the persistent 2-to-1 unemployment disparity returns in the coming months. Back in Wisconsin, DWD Secretary Caleb Frostman says the research is clear. The coronavirus pandemic is disproportionately affecting communities of color, both health-wise and economically.
You know, this is a really, I think, a once-in-a-generation opportunity for us to redefine the relationship between work and quality of life, what that means for different communities, including Wisconsin's communities of color.
That does require getting benefits to the thousands of Wisconsinites waiting. There may be good news on that front for Alfreda Casserlow. She wrote an impassioned email to the governor's office last week, telling him how bleak her situation was. A couple days later, she got a call from an adjudicator.
This man was so friendly, I wanted to hug him. He was like, I'm going to take care of this for you. You're assigned to me now. I'll handle it. And he made me feel like he was so capable.
Casserlow says she just wishes other people waiting months for unemployment could experience that too. Bram Sablesmith, Wisconsin Public Radio.